everyone has a different type of person or a different environment that they're comfortable in talking in. So as pharmacy owners and as pharmacists, we need to provide options where we can, where people can feel comfortable in talking about their medicines or their health or any other aspects of closing the gap. Hi, I'm Georgina Toomey, Managing Director at Alive Pharmacy Group and Chair of Rural Pharmacists Australia, and you're listening to The Guild Dispensary.
Welcome to The Guild Dispensary, the pharmacy podcast where we dispense the latest news and updates from The Guild, and you get to hear from industry experts on business and pharmacy-related topics.
Close the Gap is an important awareness day that aims to close the health and life expectancy gap between Indigenous and non-Indigenous. As a pharmacist and pharmacy owner, what role can you play in helping close the gap? Today, we speak to Georgina Toomey, the Managing Director at Alive Pharmacy Group and Chair of Rural Pharmacists Australia. Together, we'll explore some important questions, such as why the gap exists in the first place and how to manage cultural barriers or misconceptions, as well as what's happening in rural pharmacy on a national scale.
First up, it's time for What You May Have Missed, where we catch up on the latest news from the Guild. In the fast-paced world of pharmacy, it's easy to overlook some key updates. So let's dive in and make sure you're up to speed.
The Pharmacy Guild of Australia has reached an historic heads of agreement with the Albanese Labor government to secure Australia's 8th Community Pharmacy Agreement. News of the agreement was announced by Pharmacy Guild of Australia's National President, Professor Trent Toomey, at the 2024 Australian Pharmacy Professional Conference at the Gold Coast. Professor Toomey told the conference, quote, "Your guild has always been fully committed to signing a CPA that delivers more affordable medicines to patients while ensuring a vibrant and growing community pharmacy industry," end quote. Professor Toomey announced, one, a heads of agreement for a new community pharmacy agreement has been signed by the Commonwealth Government and the Pharmacy Guild of Australia. Two, the heads of agreement reflects an intended Australian government investment of up to an additional $3 billion in community pharmacy and in cheaper medicines. Three, the full details of the measures contained in the heads of agreement remain to be finalised by the parties as soon as practicable. And four, the parties will use their best endeavours to agree an 8 CPA commencing from 1 July 2024. Professor Toomey says the Guild will now negotiate the finer details of the agreement over the coming weeks. "We thank the government, in particular the Prime Minister and Health Minister and the Department, for the months of effort and work to reach this point." Professor Toomey said, quote, "Once the details are settled, the Guild will be travelling around the country via our State of the Industry roadshows. The Guild will explain to our members and the industry what is included in the agreement, the benefits for patients and the bright future ahead for community pharmacy," end quote. Is your pharmacy prepared for our public flu campaign? We are reaching out to those who are a pharmacy listed as a provider of influenza vaccinations on Find a Pharmacy. The Guild is gearing up for a public campaign to encourage flu vaccinations through pharmacies. As a provider of influenza vaccinations, it is important that your details, services, booking link and opening times are up to date and accurate in My Guild. This is to ensure that potential customers can easily find and book appointments with you via findapharmacy.com.au. Please take a moment to review and verify the information listed for your pharmacy via My Guild. If there are any discrepancies or changes that need to be made, please update your profile as soon as possible. If your pharmacy or pharmacies is or are also participating in the National Immunisation Program vaccination, please include this as a provided service via My Guild. To update My Guild, visit guild.org.au/my-guild/my-pharmacy and follow the simple instructions that you will find in the Guild alert that you should have in your inbox. The Guild has prepared some promotional resources that you can use in your pharmacy to help promote your flu vaccination services further, and there is a link again in the email that should be in your inbox. New member benefit launched. We are excited to announce our partnership with Blue Light Card Australia. Blue Light Card Australia is an exclusive discount service that honours frontline workers such as yourselves for your continuous dedication in caring for Australians throughout the pandemic, floods, bushfires, and of course the economic challenges. As a Guild member, you and your staff will be able to access money can't buy discounts, savings, and experiences from top brands. Whether it's filling up the fuel tank, booking your next holiday, or buying a new pair of sunnies, you can find an offer to help you make your money go further. Keep an eye out for more details and instructions on how you can activate your free Blue Light card and start enjoying the perks it offers. We can't wait to show our appreciation in a tangible way for all that you do.
Do you know a fantastic pharmacy assistant? Nominate them for Pharmacy Assistant of the Year. The award, now in its 18th year, recognises pharmacy assistants by awarding them for their skills, knowledge, leadership and customer service. Nominate today at pharmacyassistants.com/PATY.
Hi, Georgina. Big welcome to the podcast. As you know, Close the Gap Day is coming up on March 21st. It's a very important day which aims to close the health and life expectancy gap between Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. And pharmacy is probably the most accessible healthcare destination, which is sometimes the only healthcare destination in rural areas. And as such, pharmacy can play a really big part in helping close the gap and achieve that goal. Can you maybe provide some insights to kick us off into some of the challenges that Indigenous populations face in accessing healthcare, particularly pharmaceutical services, in rural areas?
I find this a really challenging topic to talk about because this is something that looks different to everyone where they live, because the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander population is made up of totally different types of people and totally different types of percentages. So I don't think there is like a one-size-fits-all answer to any of the topics that we're going to talk about today. So I think in accessing healthcare, some of the challenges are the cultural history and their acceptance of taking medicines, and their understanding of traditional medicines and how that then translates to the medicines of today that they would be accessing through community pharmacy. And, you know, that's very different. And there's different levels of acceptance and there's different levels of health literacy that goes with that. And I think that's a challenge for the pharmacist, especially given that we're usually time poor, in being able to sit down and have a proper conversation with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders to kind of gauge where they're at and what their level of acceptance is in taking medicines, so that we can actually use medicines to help close the gap and increase life expectancy and meet the targets that were set so long ago.
And I think it's a good point that there is no one size fits all. I think that's a really important point to kick off on, because otherwise we probably would have made significant progress in closing the gap already, wouldn't we?
Oh, wouldn't we have loved to? Like I've been reminding myself and refreshing on some of these targets, and, you know, these targets were set with goals for 2031, and you can take a look at the data, but, you know, they're really ambitious targets, and I hope that we can all make a difference to get there, but it's a challenge.
Hear, hear. Georgina, in your experience, what are some, let's call them common misconceptions or cultural barriers that non-Indigenous healthcare providers may encounter when working with Indigenous patients, and how can pharmacies address these effectively? You just touched upon then different people's acceptance of taking medicine and maybe some of the conversations that need to be had with them.
Yeah, and I think having the time and the right environment to have those conversations with them. So I guess we all want to be a healthcare professional and provider that is accessible and that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders feel comfortable in talking to us. But everyone has a different type of person or a different environment that they're comfortable in talking in, don't they? Like that goes for everyone, you and me too. So as pharmacy owners and as pharmacists, we need to provide options where we can, where people can feel comfortable in talking about their medicines or their health or any other aspects of closing the gap, so that they can retain that information and maybe help that translate into something that's meaningful in their lives and help improve their health outcomes. And that might be over a series of visits. That probably is an all-in-one hit. So that's then translating to developing a relationship with your patient so that they come back to you and you can build upon their education and health literacy and actually translate that into a meaningful health outcome.
That work that you do initially with trying to build a rapport, trying to educate, trying to find what is the happy medium about giving people information and engaging them, once you go down that path and you have some success, so to speak, do you find that those Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples become champions for you in their communities when they go back?
Absolutely. I mean, these guys live in their mob and they've got big families and friends and aunties and uncles. And they're all going to come in and trust you if someone else can speak highly of you or someone else trusts you or someone else has made a connection. So absolutely, I think that that's really important, that you can connect with families and mobs on different levels. And if they then recommend for someone else to come in and see you, doesn't that speak highly of the connection that you've made or the environment that you've built or the rapport that you've got, that they would then send that to the people that they trust and love?
Absolutely. Now, Georgina, your pharmacy serves a rather large Indigenous population. What kind of services or programs or maybe other initiatives have you implemented in your pharmacy to better serve that community?
Some of the most successful things that I have seen come through the pharmacy that has made some meaningful change, some of the policies that have come through from the various governments over the years. One of them was the Closing the Gap co-payment, which I think made a really big difference to the adherence of medication and the uptake of medication in the pharmacy. And, you know, that's step one, isn't it? Getting the patient to be able to afford their medication so that at least you can have a conversation about that with them and then hopefully they're going to take it. The next one was definitely the DAA funding for the full co-payment of the DAA for Indigenous Australians. And then that's uncapped as well, which has been a huge improvement for areas that I live in where we have a really high Indigenous population. So there's no ceiling on who we can provide for, and the pharmacist as a health professional doesn't have to make any judgment on who gets to benefit from this. So I think that that should be really celebrated, that we have the ability to remove cost from the health conversation when we're treating our patients.
I think that's a really good point. Removing any of those barriers around cost is always going to be a really positive step forward in those communities. Staff awareness and education, they're important really to ensure that appropriate cultural care is reflected throughout the pharmacy. What sort of policies or maybe training does your pharmacy have in place for staff to help ensure that culturally competent care for Indigenous patients is delivered?
I think, look, education is a really big piece here. And that comes in different levels for our pharmacists and pharmacy assistants and also based on their own cultural backgrounds. I've got Aussie pharmacists and I've got pharmacists from overseas that have no idea about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander populations. So we have to start at a different place in the journey and we kind of have to tailor that to the individual pharmacist and to where they're working. And I think having education, which can come in the form of cultural education or attending a conference or a face-to-face event or just spending some time with their local ARCHO and their local GPs that work in this area, I think is really valuable. I think also just learning with your colleagues. So we do a lot of internal training in our group. And I think some of the best education are the stories that we share from our own experience in our own local area. And like I said a bit earlier, everyone's local area is a little bit different here. And the people that they're seeing, you know, everyone's health literacy is a little bit different. Everyone's socioeconomic demographics are different in the area that they live in. So I really think that whilst you can get some cookie cutter education online, it's not always fit for purpose, and you need to tailor that a little bit locally. And whether that's from your internal education and expertise, or whether you look outside to local organisations that provide local education that could be have a face-to-face element, I think that stuff's really valuable in this space.
So do you spend much time, for want of a better phrase, co-designing your approach to your local community? So taking some of that big overarching advice and policies and process and all that sort of stuff, but then actually tailoring it to your area, but doing so by talking to local mobs and leaders about how to best to make it happen?
Absolutely. I mean, we engage with our local ARCHOs and local organisations. One, for example, up here is called Yeti, which engages with youth, Indigenous youth groups up here. And so we engage with lots of different groups to try and get a local spin on what's going on and tailor the approach to our pharmacists and pharmacy assistants. I think relationships and working as a team is super important in this area. And that develops trust and rapport with your patients too. When they can see you interacting with the other people that they interact with, and that we're all seeing the same touch points, then they're going to trust you that bit more.
Making a difference, making an impact is why you're in the role. Do you have any success stories or positive outcomes that have been a result from some of the initiatives your pharmacy has implemented to better serve your Indigenous patients? Because I'm guessing in your community, you'd see the impacts firsthand and be really proud of those.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a real success story for us, it was opening a pharmacy in Yarrabah, which is an Indigenous community, which is about an hour out of Cairns, and it's very remote. It's Faria, Triple M rating 5, which is very remote, even though it's only 1 hour drive from Cairns. It's quite inaccessible, and the road gets cut off regularly due to rain, and they don't have a whole lot of services in Yarrabah. So there had been a pharmacy in the past, like a while ago, and it had failed, and we had recognised the need of that community to have a pharmacy to improve their health outcomes. So we partnered with the local ARCHO out there and found a very small space, but found some space, and we've been able to get a viable pharmacy business model up and running, which then now we've seen improved adherence with a lot of our patients out there with DAA uptake. Now, it's going to take years to see that translate into better health outcomes and life expectancy and all of those closing the gap metrics that are being measured. But I hope that the little bit of effort that we've been able to make in partnering out there, and it is hard to run. It's hard to run a pharmacy. I mean, we can't have a pharmacist live out there because it's an Aboriginal community. We have to, they have to drive in every day, and we have to provide transport for that. And so it is. There are challenges that come with it, and it would be easy, I think, for some people to say that it's a bit too hard. But we have persevered, just knowing that it can make such a difference to that community.
Excellent. That's great leadership, great initiative. Congratulations on that. From a pharmacist perspective, what would you say are some good first steps a pharmacy owner can take who's listening to this and thinks, yes, I really want to make an effort in this space? What are some first steps a pharmacy owner can take to improve their environment, their pharmacy, their healthcare, to make it more suitable and welcoming to Indigenous patients in their area?
I would start by reading the Closing the Gap National Agreement and Targets, okay, because there's not one area, one single area that a pharmacist or a pharmacy owner can be a part of. There are multiple. Okay, so you need to have a really good understanding of all of the different touch points where you can make a difference here. And then I think you need to translate that into how that works with your population and your environment. And then think about how Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders are going to feel comfortable in coming into your pharmacy and talking to your pharmacists and pharmacy assistants. And then if that's not quite aligning, maybe make some changes or have a chat with someone or have a chat with some of your locals and see where you can do better.
As I mentioned earlier in the introduction, you're also the chair of Rural Pharmacists Australia. Before we move on, can you maybe explain a bit about what Rural Pharmacists Australia is and its role?
Rural Pharmacists Australia is made up of a conglomerate of different organisations that have a special interest in rural pharmacy. So we have representatives from the Pharmacy Guild of Australia, the Australian College of Pharmacy, all the heads of the universities, academics, and NAPSA, and so the Pharmacy Students Organisation, and PDL, so Pharmacy Defence Limited, so like our insurer. So that brings along a lot of different perspectives on rural pharmacy, and so we've got a really good cross section of representation where we can discuss any issues that are appropriate to rural pharmacy in Australia. And we meet every second month, and we also represent on the National Rural Health Alliance, which is a really huge organisation that has lots of representatives from lots of areas in health, and they meet pretty regularly as well to discuss wider issues in rural health in Australia.
And so what are some of the key priorities or initiatives you're currently focusing on to help improve healthcare access in rural and remote areas?
This can look a little different state to state because of the different way that health is legislated everywhere. But basically, we're looking for one of our biggest issues is workforce. So trying to make sure that we can have pharmacists where we have pharmacies in rural Australia, and making sure that those pharmacists are supported. Obviously there's been some shortages or maldistribution of pharmacists in rural Australia. So we talk about funding and things that attract pharmacists to rural areas. This is also a wider issue. So it's not just a pharmacist only issue. It's for doctors and other health professionals. So it's something that the government is quite engaged in. Workforce is probably the number one area of concern for rural pharmacists and rural pharmacies.
Georgina, to finish us off, let's round this out. Are there any sort of recent developments in remote and Indigenous health policy that affect pharmacy practice that pharmacists should be aware of?
As full scope pharmacists kind of develop, we're going to see how that influences rural pharmacy and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders and closing the gap. So far, full scope has been mainly industry funded. And that's probably because of the challenges of getting government funding for these initiatives. So whilst that's been really great, and we're about to see full scope launch in the North Queensland footprint from about April. This is going to be fully privately funded for patients. And for me, I see that as a backward step to closing the gap, because we're making it more challenging for our Indigenous patients to access healthcare from a pharmacy when it may be where they want to access or who they want to talk to, or where they present on the weekend. So I see that as a challenge moving forward, and how we as an industry partner with the government to ensure that full scope is accessible and funded for our Indigenous Australians moving forward.
Excellent chat. Georgina Toomey, Managing Director at Alive Pharmacy Group and Chair of Rural Pharmacists Australia. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your work and insights in servicing the Indigenous population and also your work at Rural Pharmacists Australia.
Thanks, Daniel.
Next up, it's Policy Corner, where we dive into the policy world of the Guild's latest submissions. Whether it's an update on an existing proposal or a brand new initiative, these submissions have the potential to shape the landscape of pharmacy.
Joining us now for Policy Corner is Scott Harris, Director of Workplace Relations and Business at the Pharmacy Guild of Australia. To expand on our previous discussion in the last episode about the changes to the industrial relations legislation. Scott, welcome back. As you indicated in the previous session, there has been four legislative changes to the Fair Work Act 2009 since December 2022. So let's discuss the changes that were introduced by Secure Jobs, Better Pay. First off, why did the federal government believe that the changes were necessary?
With the change of government from a coalition to a Labor one, they identified with their partners, being the unions, that there were changes that they believed needed to occur in the workplace. And these changes were expected to help the employees having a secure job and better pay. And that's what they're really chasing with this type of terminology. If we look at what come in on those changes, which were tabled in October 2022 and passing through in December 2022, there was a phenomenal amount of changes. If I use an example, there was 25 parts to this legislation changes. It's one of the biggest ones we've seen in such a long time. But from an employer's point of view, some of them were actually very good changes, especially where you're talking about protecting sexual harassment in the workplace, anti-discrimination measures, and fair pay for a fair job to go with it. We weren't going to argue too much against them, but some of the other ones that were introduced caused employers significant grief and concerns on how they're going to put them into place and what it actually meant to the workplace. Example, I'll use that one, is fixed-term contracts. What it stated in the legislation changes was that you are no longer able to have fixed-term contracts any longer than 2 years, except for your senior roles. But for your normal workers, there were very strict requirements and you couldn't have back-to-back ones. As soon as you had two in a row, the person had to become permanent. That really affected the workplace in some of the aspects. There was one that we did not argue against, and most employers didn't, was what they termed zombie agreements under the Enterprise Agreement Scheme, is where there were agreements that were made before 2009 and actually hadn't kept pace with the changes or the expectations of the community on what a fair entitlement an employee is entitled to. There were some we couldn't argue on those ones, and they had to be terminated, is the terminology they use. But the Secure Jobs Better Pay one had a lot of provisions in there to do with enterprise agreement bargaining. And as we know, and as is common knowledge to go with it, a Labor government with the unions like enterprise agreements because they believe they increase wages. But what we find, increasing wages hasn't increased productivity in the workplace too at the same time. And that's been an argument from the employers groups, is what is the productivity gain for us for increasing wages? It's a good cop-out to go with it from there. There was one that caused concerns from a lot of people, was the raising of the threshold of the small claims court. Now, the small claims court is a magistrate court under the systems. And at the small claims court is where unrepresented people can approach the judicial system and ask for a ruling on whether their entitlements had been paid correctly. That jurisdiction was set at $20,000 for the year. Now, that's been that level for decades plus. We weren't against the concept of increasing that threshold, but the government took it up to $100,000 as a single individual claim. Not joined together, but a single claim could be made up to $100,000. That will send the small business to the wall if they've done some simple errors with their calculations. That was a phenomenal concern and raised some issues with us on that one.
So, Scott, You've given some examples there, but are there any others around how the legislation changes specifically impact guild members, maybe including the Pharmacy Industry Award?
There is the terms to go with it. There is the aspect of where it will affect the award is a pay secrecy. The pay secrecy means that employees can ask now what other employees, what they've been paid in the comparisons. But it does protect the person who's been asked. They don't have to answer the question. But an employer can't have those. And that's a big impact because we did have some of those clauses in our employment contracts, especially for our senior roles, where we're paying good money and the person had negotiated good wages for their productivity in the workplace and the hours they work. Another one that's going to affect and is still affecting the Pharmacy Industry Award at the moment is pharmacy industry has been identified as a highly feminised industry. Not complaining or not saying against that one, but by indicating that a highly feminised industry has raised to what is called equal remuneration and expert panels where there are going to be sessions taken on those particular looked at whether the wage rates within the award have been paid correctly against other comparative industries who are probably male dominated. And that's still playing out at the moment in the sessions. If I look through and think about all the changes that come into it and direct impacts on the Pharmacy Industry Award, in the Secure Jobs Better Pay one, there wasn't a great deal that impacted directly on the Pharmacy Industry Award. However, as a small business, there were some impacts in generic terms.
So, Scott, when did or will the changes occur? Are they staged? Are they just all implemented at once? Or what's the timeline?
Okay, so if we're just talking about the Secure Jobs Better Pay one, they've actually, some of them commenced in December 2022. However, they all predominantly went through 2023, was the whole year. A lot of those ones come in. And the last one on that was the authorised employee deductions, which was put into place in the 30th of December in 2023. So it took them 12 months to bring these things into the system. Now, that's on top of additional parts they put through, which is in the next lot of legislation to talk about parental leave and that. But it's a 12 months lead time. There is one that's a little bit going to take until the middle of this year. And that's where you're talking about something to do with the enterprise agreements, which is not a highly used in our industry or in community pharmacy, but it is an option that a community pharmacy may think of putting an enterprise agreement into place.
So, Scott, those people listening and thinking, geez, I need to get up to speed with some of this stuff, remind us again how members and listeners can find out more information about this subject.
There's three ways for a member to get in touch. The first one is to get in touch with their local advisor at the branch. This is on the Guild website. At the same time, on the Guild website under the workplace relations area, we do have information about what's coming in, what's happening and that. And the other one is we do send out a workplace relations blog as these titles come up to all members who are registered with their email address to inform them these are the changes coming. If you've got any concerns or ideas, come and talk to us and we'll help you put it in the place.
Scott, thanks for joining us and discussing the changes that were introduced by the Secure Jobs Better Pay legislative changes.
And if the members have got any questions, just have a look at the Guild WR page and come and talk to us about those concerns.
I hope you found the chat with Georgina insightful today, and I hope that you will come out of this with some thoughts and ideas on how you can contribute within your pharmacy to close the gap in your community. And of course, thanks again to Scott for joining us with those legislative updates. I've been your host, Daniel Oyston, and you've been listening to episode 2 of the Guild Dispensary.